Chapter 8, Betty Newton Girls. "Get on your knees," she said. She backed up slightly, securing her pistol from my reach. I obeyed because she had the gun, and also because being on my knees was at least an improvement over being flat on my back. "Is this a trick-or-treat or what? 'Cause you can help yourself. Shut up. Do as I say." I was almost certain it was a voice I had never heard before. "I'm serious. You can have anything you want." She silenced me again with a threatening thrust of her gun. The barrel end was shaking somewhat, but the menace behind her voice was unmistakable. "One more word," she said. After I was up on my knees, she then did a very un-mugger-like thing. She leaned across and tilted the shade of my desk lamp, so it was now shining directly at my face, the way the police do in old movies when they are about to interrogate someone. She undid her chin strap and removed her conical hat and pink wig along with it. Raven hair came tumbling down. Then, placing a thumb beneath her chin, in one swift motion, she ripped off her mask, doing it so quickly I barely had time to blink, let alone take a swipe at her gun. Her eyes never left mine. At first, nothing registered. Then the impact was huge. I felt like I was seeing a ghost, a doppelganger image superimposed over living flesh. It was the face of the girl from under the shrubbery, the face of Beverly Martindale. I said, "Wait, you must be, who are you?" While I was busy stammering, she was intently focusing on my face, continuing to study it but saying nothing. I filled the awkward silence by voicing a theory. "You're her identical twin, right? Look, don't make a mistake. I didn't kill your sister. I only found her body." "Prove it." "The police let me go." "What does that prove?" "They know I didn't do it." "How do they know?" "Because I couldn't have." "Why couldn't you?" I was certain that under the circumstances, Detective Lippincott would forgive my revealing classified information. "Because I didn't have any bite marks on me," I said. This produced a longer pause. "Bite marks? What do you mean?" It took a few moments for the understanding to sink in. Meanwhile, I clarified, "Your sister bit her attacker. I didn't have any bite marks, so they knew I couldn't have done it." As soon as this shocking fact hit home, all her bravado ran out like sawdust from a Raggedy Ann doll. She transformed instantly from assailant to victim. She allowed her gun to drop to her side, while with her other hand she covered her face. Her shoulders began to shake and she began to sob. I figured it was safe to get off my knees. Carefully, I took the gun away from her and then led her to the guest chair where I gently guided her to sit. When I could, I asked her, "What did you do with your fiddle?" Although still choked up, she was able to answer, "I put it in the lounge." "We probably shouldn't leave it there." I poured her a glass of water from my sink and handed her a box of tissues. "Here, stay here. I'll go get it." I went out and took my time retrieving it before coming back. When I did, she was still weeping, and there was a pile of sodden tissues in her lap. I scooped them up and deposited them in the wastebasket under my sink. Although attempting to rally herself, she was still shaky. She said, "So she's bit him. Good. I hope it really hurt. I hope it gives him gangrene and he's dying of it somewhere right now. At least she fought back." This brought up another upwelling, leading to another round of nose-blowing. She tried gamely to toss the ball of tissue into the wastebasket, but missed. Sympathetically, I said, "In fighting back, your sister gave the police the best possible means to track him down." She dabbed at her eyes and blew her nose again, sailed another tissue at the wastebasket, and missed once more. I guess she was probably horrible at basketball free throws. I picked up both wads and added them to the collection. She said, "Thank you. I owe you a box of Kleenex." "On the house," I said. "I can't really apologize enough for what I just did."
"You don't have to apologize."
"I don't, huh?" She straightened up and began trying to flex a cramp or a soreness from between her shoulder blades. I asked her, "Is that from crying or from carrying around that big fiddle?"
"Please, don't call it a fiddle. It's a viola. And no, I'm used to that. It's from crying, I guess. And from tension. I'm sorry I had to put you through that test. I know your name's Parker Robinson, right?"
"And what might yours be?"
"Monica."
"Martindale?"
"Yes."
"Well, Miss Martindale, you don't have to apologize. If that was my brother who had been murdered, my identical twin, I might have done the same thing."
"Do you have a twin brother?"
"No, I'm an only child."
"Yeah, so am I. Now..."